You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain, the Tao of the Tao of Jeet Kune Do. Posthumous pastiches and the preemption of accusations of plagiarism. One of my fondest martial arts memories from the 1970s recalls a buzz that arose in the martial arts magazines at that time. This was a quarter of a century before the internet. For those who tried to keep their fingers on the pulse of what was happening in the martial arts, magazines like Black Belt and Inside Kung Fu were the closest thing to it in those days. The buzz that grew in the early years of that decade was that the recently deceased Bruce Lee's unfinished masterwork, The Tao of Jeet Kune Do, was going to be completed by people who best knew how to do so, and then was going to be published. I fairly quivered with anticipation. I was a senior in high school when I finally received my long and eagerly anticipated copy of this legendary tome in the mail. The book was beautiful, sporting a hard cover, and a dust jacket graced with a photo of Sifu Bruce. I devoured it. I read it cover to cover the first day, and have probably read it at least 100 times more between then and now. I remember carefully memorizing, trying, and practicing everything it said regarding actual martial arts techniques. There are 2 extensive sections on philosophy that also bear careful study. As I grew more and more familiar with the Tao of Jeet Kune Do, however, a number of questions and observations did occur to me. In some areas, the flow of information in the book was uneven, to say the least. Some sections barely scratched the surface of the subject at hand, while others dove deeply into granular detail. I later came to realize that this was due to the way the book was put together by the editors who assembled it from the notes and files of Bruce Lee, and their apparent ignorance of the sources for many of his notes. As it turns out, despite what it says on the spine, the front of the cover, and the title page, The Tao of Jeet Kune Do was not written by Bruce Lee, at least not all of it. You see, when he died, he left behind a number of pieces of actual, dedicated writing intended for publication as part of the book. But taken by themselves, they weren't sufficient to comprise an entire volume with Bruce Lee's name on it. Mr. Lee also left piles and piles of notes and drawings that, in hindsight, were probably not intended for inclusion in the book, but more for personal reference, to be used in training or in developing a curriculum for his students. He had accumulated these notes over time as he was inspired by books, other martial artists, or by ideas from his own fertile imagination. Because he copied such notes especially extensively in areas that his formal training hadn't covered, like boxing, grappling, and fencing, the notes were often most comprehensive in the areas in which Bruce Lee was the least knowledgeable. It's also probably the case that there was not adequate labeling to help in distinguishing which notes Bruce Lee intended to contribute to the book and which he didn't. This resulted in a Tao of Jeet Kune Do with very uneven amounts of material covering the various areas of the martial arts. For example, there was almost no material on fighting in close range, specifically the trapping hands techniques of Wing Chun Kung Fu, an area that was a specialty of Mr. Lee's. This was especially disappointing to a young me, because I was powerfully interested at the time in trapping hands. As I said, some of these notes may have been intended by Mr. Lee for use in the book, but that he also was in the habit of making notes and drawings for future personal reference. For this reason, it was not uncommon for him to copy down sentences or even whole paragraphs from books, magazine articles, or other reference material. In the days before the internet, it was common for scholars to keep such collections of hard copy notes. I did so myself. Since much of this material was intended for his personal use and not for publication, Mr. Lee was not in the habit of including bibliographical citations with the notes. When the people who put the final version of the book together gathered these materials, it obviously did not occur to them that much of the material they were using was lifted directly from other sources, and may in the future lead to accusations of plagiarism. After all, Bruce Lee did not include a written warning in the notes saying something like, "Hey, future curators and editors of my notes, in case I die unexpectedly, decades before I should normally be expected to, be careful to note that not all of my notes are my own original thoughts." The most famous example of this concerns an excellent boxing textbook published in 1940, entitled simply Boxing, and was written by Edwin Haslett. It just so happens that I picked up a copy of this book at a used bookstore in the early 70s, years before I purchased The Tao of Jeet Kune Do. I remember when subsequently reading from the Tao, I had the thought, I've read this somewhere before. As I said earlier, I read the Tao a huge number of times, but had not dusted off my copy of Haslett's Boxing for a few years. It was a few more years before I did indeed pull Haslett's book back off the shelf. As I reread it, I grew more and more alarmed. I had definitely read this before. Large sections of the Tao of Jeet Kune Do were obviously identical to sections of Haslett's book. I turned to the first page of his book to check the copyright date. 1940. What the hell? Bruce Lee was born in 1940. I opened both books to find matching passages. Yep. There it was in black and white, except the words left and right were in every case opposite from one volume to the other. Okay, that kind of makes sense. Bruce Lee preferred to fight in a southpaw stance, so if he was copying the words of Haslett for his own personal learning and training, it would be logical and even sensible for him to transpose the words right and left, and vice versa. The notes would make much more sense in the middle of a training session that way. In the future, this obvious use of material from Haslett's book led some to accuse Bruce Lee of plagiarism. But further investigation revealed that it was more likely the case that the editors inadvertently included material that Bruce Lee never intended to be part of the book. Further investigation revealed more sections of the Tao of Jeet Kune Do that were included without realizing that they too were from other books. These include sections from Fencing by Hugo and James Costello, and On Fencing by Aldo Nadi, sections from other fencing texts by Roger Krosnier, Julio Costello, and sections from books of philosophy by Jiddu Krishnamurti, D.T. Suzuki, and Eric Hoffer. So in the final analysis, what should we make of this pastiche of a book? Let's compare it to another incomplete work of Mr. Lee's, the movie The Game of Death. Bruce Lee died with only about 35 minutes of usable footage recorded for this film. Fortunately, it's made up entirely of action scenes. Fans, including yours truly, waited the better part of a decade to see this footage, in the interim being teased with still photos of Mr. Lee in his iconic yellow tracksuit in action with Dan Inosanto and 7'2" Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. When someone bought the rights to the film and finished it, I was excited as I had been for the release of The Tao of Jeet Kune Do. The finished product of The Game of Death was, sadly, except for the fantastic original footage, a horrible hack job. At one point during the new footage, there is actually a shot with a still photograph of Bruce Lee's head, very crudely and obviously pasted on a moving actor's body. It's hilarious to me in 2016, but in 1977, it made me furious. It was obvious that whoever was responsible for finishing this movie made no effort at achieving anything resembling quality, instead relying cynically on Bruce Lee's fans impatient to fork over the money for a ticket just to watch these 35 minutes of quality footage. In contrast to that, The Tao of Jeet Kune Do was a success. Personally, I got a lot from it. It's unfortunate that many sections of the book were inadvertently included in a way that understandably led to accusations of plagiarism. The evidence indicates, at least to me, that this was an honest mistake. Subsequent updated versions of the book do give credit to the authors of some of these sections. In the final analysis, I suspect that Bruce Lee is blameless for any odor arising from the appearance of plagiarism in the book, and for the horrible atrocity that was the first release of The Game of Death. In each case, the problems resulted from people being in too much of a hurry to cash in on the fan frenzy after Bruce Lee's untimely death. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, or check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.